The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents... Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, tokers and tokettes. It is Tuesday, August 3rd, 2010, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for the next hour of news, talk, interviews, information, music, comedy, and more by, for, and about the cannabis community. We're coming to you live from Rolla J Studios in beautiful Portland, Oregon, home of the 2010 Normal National Conference. And also today is a very special day for one of my favorite musicians' birthdays, Louis Armstrong, the Viper himself, Satchmo, lover of muggles. So I thought we'd open up with a little bit of Louis. Also joining us here in our studio to my left, the pirate, Ganja John.
Arr, I'm trying to mess with the levels. I'm trying to get this song perfect so we can just talk over it.
I know, it's beautiful. We got the trumpet going there.
We can always open with old Satch. I don't mind.
I love Satchmo. Yeah, so Louis Armstrong's birthday today, so happy birthday, Louis. And, you know, he loved the Gage, loved the Mary Warner. Also joining us from our virtual studio in Astoria, Oregon, the lovely and talented newsreader, Cannabis Carrie.
Hello, boys.
Oh, you sound so good, Carrie.
I'm actually here. I learned how to plug in all those little things now.
Oh, it sounds so good. Carrie brings us our headlines right after the top of the show here. And tell us what's in the news today.
Well, yesterday, actually, I was thrilled to see multiple headlines that our nation's drug czar has given an approving nod to medical marijuana and its regulation. Well, we're going to tear that apart and look at what he actually said. Plus, Colorado's journey into dispensary regulation has passed another mile marker with the state's Department of Revenue, a look into what they want to do with the state's legal sale of medical cannabis, and a national threat to those sugary, sweet, and deliciously medicated treats that have become a mainstay at cannabis events nationwide. All that and Radical Russ's comments coming up on today's Hemp Headlines.
Oh, and we also get a bonus double dip of Cannabis Carry today because for our daily Toker Tune, at 20 after, it's Electric Tuesday, and Sara normally joins us from Boston, but she is expecting and she is under the weather today. So Carrie brought us some music for today. She'll be bringing that right at 20 after the hour. At half past, we do our California Marijuana Report with Eric Brenner. He's got Angela Bacaw from Green Aid in California, as well as Ed Rosenthal, Ask Ed, and his drug criminal of the week. Then at the end of the show, 45 past, we're going to do a little radical ranting. I've got updates on the initiatives in the Western states to legalize marijuana. Some interesting news coming down from on high. You'll definitely want to stay tuned for that. All of that, plus the chat room and all the fun you've come to expect from Normal Show Live. Please stay with us. We are blogging at stash.normal.org. You can email us, stash@normal.org. I'm Radical Russ on Twitter, Ganja John on Twitter. We're right back after this.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation. Normal Show Live will bring you exclusive live coverage of Seattle Hemp Fest on the third weekend of August. You'll probably remember more of it than those of us attending.
Today I was walking down the street, to my surprise, yeah.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, or NORML, invites you to our 39th Annual National Conference, Legalization, Just Say Now, in beautiful Portland, Oregon.
Extend your visit through Sunday, September 12th, and you can also attend the free two-day Portland Hempstock, the largest outdoor cannabis and music festival in Oregon.
Details available on the web at normal.org/conference or by calling 202-483-5500.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's NORML News with Cannabis Carrie.
Ever since the Obama administration, through his Attorney General Eric Holder, announced they would no longer spend time and revenue going after those that were operating within the state law, activists have been agonizing over what he actually meant. Activists in California have been looking for signs that the administration might be moving beyond just tolerating medical marijuana to considering a major policy overhaul when it comes to cannabis laws. The head of the White House's Office of National Drug Control Policy, Gil Krulikowski, added another small beacon of hope last Thursday when he was visiting the state of California. According to the Sacramento Bee, it was just a few words, and to note, he was actually visiting California to announce a crackdown on huge commercial pot farms in the Sierra Nevada foothills. After warning Californians and Americans of the dangers posed to our national forests by illegal marijuana cultivation on public land, he also pointed to the state and local jurisdictions that have dealt with the state legalization of medical marijuana, saying, quote, "They are doing a really good job of licensing land use and those kind of regulations," unquote. As activists grabbed onto those words as a nod of approval, one federal drug official was quick to come forward to say that there is no policy change here, and most likely the drug czar was pointing to the communities that have cracked down on any medical marijuana dispensaries. Well, without any further comment from our top national official on drug control policy, we're left to speculate. But since the office of the official National Drug Control Policy website does list the 208 cities in California that have imposed a ban or moratorium on the dispensaries, the activists that are considering his words as hopeful may just be seeing the nug jars half full. And by the way, the sweep that Krulikowski was on hand to commend netted 97 arrests, used 450 agents and multiple helicopters, destroyed 432,000 plants, which the agency put a price tag of $1.7 billion worth, that's with a B, and that three-week sweep ended on Friday.
Okay, well, Carrie, I think you nailed it, too, because there's no way Gil Krulikowski was, say, you know, praising Oakland for licensing 4 mega grows or Berkeley for licensing 6 dispensary suppliers or anything like that. No, he's probably referring to the more conservative areas of California that have cracked down on the dispensaries and set up, you know, owner's zoning restrictions. And to be there to on this illegal crackdown on pot farms, I mean, we've said it before, we'll say it again, you never see federal troops, federal agents, police officers, sheriffs, helicopters busting illegal vineyards. You never see that. You never see a bunch of people get together and create a vineyard out there in the public land so that they can grow grapes and sell wine. You never see them busting illegal tobacco fields, you know? It just never happens. It always seems to be marijuana fields they're busting. Look, if you're tired of the illegal pot farms causing so much damage to public lands, legalize the cultivation of marijuana so that we can do it on our private lands. We'd be glad to grow the marijuana. But so long as there is going to be a demand for it, somebody's going to step up to supply it. And the more you crack down, the further into the woods you drive the people that are going to supply that marijuana. And also, this notion, first of all, 450 agents and multiple helicopters, let's do the math on how much, you know, that costs the taxpayers to send out. And the notion that they busted and they got $1.7 billion worth of crop, well, it's always funny how when they make the busts and they want to, you know, trumpet how big a bust it is, they'll estimate these huge amounts for the plants, right? And these are plants that hadn't come to harvest yet, right? It's still August. It's just barely August, right? So they weren't ready to be harvested yet. So there's no telling as to whether or not they'd have actually made it to harvest.
To me, they'd be worth nothing.
Yeah. If they're not, you know, flowering yet,
yeah.
What are they worth?
Yeah.
Nothing. But no, they always estimate that, oh, this plant's going to grow X amount and that amount times X per pound. And that's how they come up with 1.7 billion. They always estimate it that way when they're busting the plants. But when they bust the medical marijuana patients and the medical marijuana patients want to sue to get their plants back or to get their medicine back, suddenly those estimates get really small. It's always interesting how that works. So once again, a complete waste of time, waste of resources by our federal government, and nothing new from Gil Kerlikowske.
Colorado's medical marijuana industry has passed another marker yesterday when the deadline came, or actually on Sunday, excuse me, when the deadline came for all dispensary owners in the state to submit the 30-plus page licensing application form or close shop. State Department of Revenue officials accepted applications up until 5 p.m. on Sunday, with just a few last-minute operators turning in their paperwork before the office closed their doors. This will allow the department to finally have a tally on the number of dispensaries in operation in the Centennial State, a number that has been placed at more than 1,000, but it is still unclear how many dispensaries filled out the lengthy application. The paperwork that had to be turned in by Sunday night required applicants to reveal financial information, criminal history, and educational background, among other personal details. Along with the paperwork, the application fee, which can range anywhere from $7,500 to $18,000, was also due. Precise rules for how Colorado dispensaries can operate have yet to be written and won't go into place until next July, according to Matt Cook, the Revenue Department's Senior Director of Enforcement. But he envisions requiring dispensaries to be equipped with networks of cameras, which would allow state agencies to remotely track every single gram of marijuana from seed to sale. According to the Denver Post, some dispensary owners, like Kathleen Chippy, who owns the One Brown Mouse Dispensary in Niederland, and has about 2,000 patients she served, she made the decision to just shut down as opposed to fill out the application and turn in the fees. After reading the application, she felt that it was just requiring her to sign away too many rights. The next deadline in the Colorado dispensary drama is September 1st. By September 1st, Colorado dispensaries have to prove they are growing at least 70% of their own cannabis.
Well, every time they try to come up with regulations, they always seem to err on the side of being more and more restrictive. We've seen it in California and in the LA basin, and now we're seeing it in Colorado. And that demand, again, is not going to go away. We've got these patients who've been used to getting their marijuana from those dispensaries. They're either going to go to the dispensaries that remain, you know, giving them more business and more power, or they're going to return to the black market or return to, you know, getting it from friends or wherever they can get it. So the demand is not go away just because you further restrict these guys. But I wanted to give you some of the numbers. This is from Colorado's or Denver's Westword, which is their alternative weekly here. The tally of the licenses that got applied for here, 717 dispensaries, 271 marijuana-infused product manufacturers. That's, you know, people making marijuana brownies, marijuana cookies, whatever. And 1,071 grow facilities. In total, earning the state $7.34 million in fees. Now, that number is quite astounding, you know, making $7 million off of the regulated marijuana trade there in Colorado. That's good news because, you know, politicians love the money. They love the revenue, especially when they're not having to raise taxes on other areas and they can raise it on something controversial like the fees on medical marijuana dispensaries. But that's not the number that shocked me the most when I was doing this research. The number that really blew me away is when they said, considering there's roughly 105,000 medical marijuana patients in Colorado, that breaks down to about 150 patients for every dispensary. 105,000 medical marijuana patients in Colorado. That blew my mind because I checked the Colorado Medical Marijuana Registry online, and their last statistical update was from November of 2009, 8 months ago, and they had 30,000 patients at that time. So if I'm reading this right, Colorado's added 75,000 medical marijuana patients in the span of 8 months. And a large degree of this has to do with dispensaries. When there is access, people will go through the trouble of actually registering to get their medical marijuana card. We saw it in Montana. In Montana, from March to September of 2009, they saw registrations double from about 2,000 to about 4,000. 6 months later, it tripled from 4,000 to 12,000, again, coinciding with the advent of dispensaries in those states. Now, with Montana, you got about 1 million people in the population. That makes about 1.2% of the population who are medical marijuana patients. Colorado, it's about 2.1% of their 5 million people have medical marijuana cards. It just goes to show you, when you provide the people the access, they will follow the laws and register with the state.
Medical marijuana users are being threatened by a new Senate bill that will leave a bad taste in the mouths of some if it makes it through the House. Last Thursday, the Senate passed a bill that would double the penalties for people who sell cannabis-infused sweets. As it is written, the Saving Kids from Dangerous Drug Act would increase penalties twofold for anyone that makes or sells cannabis candy. According to Senator Dianne Feinstein, back in January of 2009, she sponsored the bill. It makes it unlawful for any adult to knowingly and intentionally manufacture, create, distribute, or dispense, or even to possess with such an intent, a Schedule I or controlled substance that is, one, combined with a candy product, two, marketed or packaged to appear similar to a candy product, or three, modified by flavoring or coloring with the intent to distribute, dispense, or sell to a person under 21 years of age. Now, although the bill is aimed at adults selling products to children, the language is broad enough to include any edibles that may look like a treat kids would like. Medical edibles are a significant part of the multi-billion dollar medical marijuana industry, since many patients cannot or elect not to smoke medical cannabis. Those that advertise the cannabis treats will be especially vulnerable if the bill passes the House, as alternative papers in California and Colorado are filled with pictures of cannabis candies. We will be tracking this federal bill and let you know of any new developments.
Yeah, this is interesting, and it got some firestorm of controversy when it appeared on CBS.com with comments from our executive director, Alan St. Pierre, basically saying that now people that are making medibles, as we call them, marijuana-infused products, are no longer going to be able to call it candy or make it appear like candy. And it reminds me, and that's not support for this bill, that's just saying that here's the effect of the bill. You can't play the wink-wink nudge-nudge game and call it medical on one hand, but then make butter fingers, right? Or things that look like candy and call that medicine, because it blows the public's mind, right? It's that old Judge Judy syndrome. Don't pee on my leg and tell me it's raining. You can't tell the public that this is medicine, it's serious, but then unlike any other medicine, you're turning it into something that's candy-like. Now, I did have some people that commented the the Flintstones vitamins that are the gummy bear types or the things that are the grape flavoring for your medicines. Right. Those are medicines that are designed to be given to children, right? So therefore, we give them things that are appealing to children. The whole idea behind this medical marijuana bill is that medical marijuana is not supposed to be designed for children or to entice children, and that's what they're trying to eliminate. It is very controversial. But it does remind me, this whole subject of marijuana candies. I mean, I'll be honest, I've been to California and been to the events, and there's things, you know, lolly pipes, and there's candies and things that look like, you know, the Reese's peanut butter cups and so on. But, you know, it reminds me a little bit of Chris Rock's routine when he talks about rap music, when he says, I love rap music, but I'm tired of defending it. Right. And he's pointing out how sometimes there's misogynistic rap lyrics and, you know, awful stuff he hates to defend.
From the window to the wall. You know what I'm talking
about. From the window to the wall. Exactly. Yeah. Sometimes I feel that way about medical marijuana. I love medical marijuana. Of course I love medical marijuana. The people who need it, it's medicine. They've got to have access to the medicine. It's cruel and unusual punishment to not let them get access to the medicine. But sometimes it gets hard to defend. Man, it gets really hard to defend when someone's making something that looks like a candy bar with a logo that's just like the Butterfinger candy bar called Butterfingers, right? And trying to say this is medicine. Obviously, a kid is not going to see that and make the distinction, right? He's just going to go for, oh, candy, great, right? We have to think about this when we're trying to pass medical marijuana initiatives and we're trying to interface with the public. We forget sometimes in our little circle. I mean, we know how wonderful marijuana is, how harmless it is, how non-addictive it is and so forth, and what a great medicine it is. But the general public doesn't know that. They still think of it as a dangerous drug. So when you come to them calling it medical marijuana, but then packaging it like candy, they see it as you trying to get dangerous drugs to kids. So think carefully, marketers and potrepreneurs out there, about how you're marketing things. I'm not saying that a peanut butter cup or a Butterfinger bar is a bad way to get people their medicine. It's the way you're marketing it. It's the way that you're presenting it as being something that is other than what you're describing it as. That's all we're saying here. So be cognizant of that and make better choices.
Break time.
Break time. Time for a Butterfinger. We'll be back in just a little bit with Cannabis Carry and your Electric Tuesday tune. Stick around.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? Reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Normal National Conference 2010, September 9th through the 11th, in beautiful Portland, Oregon. Portland? Is this a typo? Oh, ha! I get it. For more details, see norml.org/conference.
Hi, it's a kite, everybody.
This drug in front of me is what they call marijuana.
If we had a dime for every dime bag bought in America, marijuana would be legal by now. Donate to Normal at norml.org and support Normal Show Live.
I'm going to light.
Roll a big fatty.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420 friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we bring you tunes for Electric Tuesday, our segment featuring the best of modern electric music in the genres of dance, new age, house, and experimental. Brought to you by Sara Kant in Boston, Massachusetts, and Sara Kant Photography. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
Oh, thank you so much, Dan Michaels. You pronounce that name so much better than I do. Unfortunately, Sara is not with us today. She's under the weather. But the bonus here is that we get Cannabis Carry again. Welcome back, Carrie.
Hi, and this is my first stab at electronica, so this is going to be good.
This is going to be fun, and I love the song that you uploaded for us, but did you spell the band's name right? Is that really their name?
I don't know, Russ. I think so. Mantra Porno. Doesn't that sound right?
I love it.
Mantra Porno. I love it.
Yeah, and I don't know a lot about them. They're either Hungarian or Austrian, but either way, I've dubbed them Kickassian because of this great tune that they have today. The tune is called Ganja Police, and after watching the video and listening to the song a few times, I'm guessing that over in Hungary or Austria, wherever they're at, that maybe they're just finally now getting Starsky and Hutch and Beretta reruns on their TVs.
I've been to Eastern Europe, and it is like an episode of Starsky and Hutch, they just got the 80s. So.
They just got the 80s.
Excellent. Okay. I love it. So this will be their soundtrack today. So here is Mantra Porno and Ganja Police.
lines.
Tunes at the Stash blog by surfing to stash.normal.org and choosing media, and then Toker Tunes from the main menu.
It only comes twice a day, but I don't care.
It's 420 somewhere.
Time for a look at Normal's Cannabis Community Calendar, which you can find at normal.org/calendar. Today, Tuesday, August 3rd, the Northern Michigan Combustion Club is meeting at the Sheboygan Library in Sheboygan, Michigan. See the calendar for more details. There's a weekly medicating event at the Phoenix Cafe in Hazel Park, Michigan, $7 cover charge. Kalamazoo Area Combustion Club in Michigan is meeting at Charlie's Place. For more info, check out KalamazooAreaCompassionClub.org. Joplin Normal in Joplin, Missouri is meeting at the Blackthorn Pizza and Pub at 5 p.m. They meet to educate each other and learn about local and national issues. See Joplin-Normal.org for details. In Albuquerque, New Mexico, Hemp TV is on the air on cable access. Call 505-880-0666 for tickets to the show. Tomorrow, Wednesday, August 4th, Muskegon Normal's Potluck and Farmers Market is taking place at Muskegon Normal headquarters on Sherman Boulevard in Muskegon, Michigan. You must be a member to attend. Check out MuskegonNormal.org for information. Cincinnati's Fountain Square Reggae Night is happening from 7 to 9 in Cincinnati, Ohio. Visit Miami Valley Normal or MVNormal.org for more information. Grand Traverse Compassion Connection Meeting is meeting in Traverse City, Michigan. GTCompassionCenter.org for information. Ohio Normal is having their monthly meeting via Pal Talk on the web. Check out Ohio Normal. Normal.net for information on that. On Thursday, August 5th, Philly Normal in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania is having their meeting at the A Space, 4722 Baltimore Avenue. They always meet on the first and third Thursdays of the month at 7:30 p.m. Check out phillynormal.org for all the information you need. We'll have all of these information and more up on our calendar at normal.org/calendar.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
When I smoke it, satisfaction guaranteed.
Hi, this is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal. This year, the Drug Czar's office has a $60 million budget for advertising their Reefer Madness propaganda. We here at Normal don't have that kind of money, but we've got two weapons for fighting back. Your donations and the truth. Please, make a donation to Normal so we can continue to expand this podcast and our other media campaigns. Even a donation of $4.20 can help. Visit us on the web at norml.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL, N-O-R-M-L. Thank you for caring and sharing. Give it to me, that's what I need. When I smoke it, satisfaction.
California has long been the epicenter of marijuana law reform in the United States. We're joined now by Eric Brenner, the producer of the California Marijuana Report, for an interview with an important figure in cannabis in the Golden State. You can hear the entire California Marijuana Report on KRXA AM 540 in Monterey. Now, here's Eric Brenner.
Hi, this is Chief Mayor, and you listen to Eric Brenner on the California Marijuana Report.
Death and terror, courtesy of the Columbia, Missouri SWAT team, who were ordered into that home on February 11th of 2010 because a judge said marijuana may be on the property. The result, 4 marijuana seeds, 1 dead dog, and a very scared young child. Joining us to discuss this national outrage is Green Aid Media Coordinator Angela Baca. Angela, this is a pretty disturbing video of the Columbia, Missouri SWAT team invading this man's home because of marijuana.
Just came in and shot 2 dogs in front of the small children over 1 gram of marijuana and a pipe. Ed Rosenthal, my boss and the executive director of Green Aid, and I both filed complaints to the Columbia, Missouri Police Department, which was followed up by a letter saying that the chief of police decided to exonerate the officers involved. We filed an appeal, and we were the first 2 people to file an appeal, which has made headlines here in Missouri because we are from California.
My question to you, Angela Baca, when is this police officer going to be arrested and jailed?
Well, it's funny because today I was able to obtain a 250-page report from the police on the incident, and the way they did their investigation outlined that they would not address any one of our concerns and not use any one of those as guidelines to convict these cops of any wrongdoing. So they investigated the officers based on nothing. There was no way that they were going to convict these officers of any wrongdoing. And So we're trying to appeal and make sure that the local citizens here are with us and that they can also continue the appeal and continue to fight for rights here in Missouri.
So what you're saying to us here on the California Marijuana Report, Angela Baca of Green Aid, the police got off scot-free from this massacre over marijuana there in Missouri.
Not even a finger wag.
Well, Angela, you're there to change that. And, of course, Ed Rosenthal filing this appeal with the Citizen Review Board from California shows that we are keeping the pressure on these creeps at the Columbia Police Department and using the SWAT team, killing family dogs in the name of marijuana is unacceptable.
Well, it's not even just the dead dogs that we're taking issue with. We're taking issue with the fact that this was a violent and militaristic raid in the home of a family that had a 7-year-old child present. But a lot of people are saying that we need to keep our noses out of it and that we belong in California and we have no say in this. But we're not operating alone. We're operating with the support of a lot of people in the community. And like I said, I have a lot of them with me right now. What I say is that for the last 3 years, I've seen all the warrants and affidavits issued that were served by SWAT teams here in Columbia, Missouri. They were for every single narcotics charge, period. So some of them were kids in their college room sitting around smoking a joint and playing Xbox when the SWAT team came in. So this is every drug raid in Columbia for the last couple of years.
Angela, this is the exact reason why I created the California Marijuana Report, to take our country back from these people. The police need to step out of the way and let the people of the United States of America grow and use marijuana. Killing family dogs, sending in the SWAT team, pointing guns at young children in the name of marijuana is unacceptable.
Not just limited to that incident. There have been a lot of incidents in Columbia lately with someone being pulled over for a minor traffic violation, and within 23 seconds, the cop tasered the man in the car in front of his child and his wife. There's many other situations like that. There was also a situation where there was a man standing over a bridge on Interstate 70 here who was threatening to jump. The cops came to handle the situation, and they tasered him, and he fell off. There are so many gross misuses of military... There's so many misuses of police brutality here that this group has had a lot to deal with.
So, Angela, how do people stay in touch with you?
If people want to stay in touch with me or follow what I'm doing here in Missouri, they can Twitter the handle Ed Rosenthal.
And we're pleased to welcome back to the California Marijuana Report for our weekly segment, Dirty Drug War Criminal of the Week, the guru of ganja himself, Ask Ed Rosenthal. Ed, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Ed Rosenthal, we have a medical terrorist alert here in the state of California. Tell me, who's the California Marijuana Report's Dirty Drug War Criminal of the Week?
Kamala Harris.
Well, well, well. If it isn't the San Francisco District Attorney herself. Ed Rosenthal, tell me about this louse in a blouse, San Francisco District Attorney Kamala Harris.
San Francisco District Attorney and California Attorney General candidate Kamala Harris has publicly denounced marijuana legalization as last week's medical terrorist Steve Cooley has, who is also running for this office. So we have the choice of two medical terrorists, a Democrat and a Republican. Great, isn't it? To begin with, she was no bargain as far as medical marijuana goes in San Francisco. She follows the lead of the police department, doing rear guard terrorist actions against dispensaries, vendors, and even individual growers who are legally using marijuana. Both the state of California and the city of San Francisco are broke, but she insists on spending scarce taxpayer dollars harassing sick people and those who enjoy marijuana recreationally in a city where the first lowest priority law, Prop W, proposed by Dennis Perone in 1978 and which passed by a landslide and is still official city policy. Harris claims she is a female Obama. Does this mean she's going to change from rational opinions and politics as a candidate to irrational and failed policies when she gets into office? The problem with this ballot is that you can't vote no. Both these candidates stink. Neither deserves our vote.
And I would say District Attorney Kamala Harris is one of the most dangerous women in elected office today. This is someone who smiles and cheers when uniformed SFPD prance out of households in the Sunset District with marijuana plants in their hand. These are uniformed officers who were trained to keep the peace. Here they are removing plants from people's homes. This is a woman who is a true medical terrorist.
Yes, Paris is so far right that even the California Democratic Party took a neutral position on Prop 19, but she wrote valid arguments against it that are being used in the voter guides. She deserves a boot in the bay.
Ed, let's send this dirty drug war criminal of the week, the louse in the blouse, San Francisco District Attorney Kamala Harris, straight to the cleaners. Get her out of here, Ed. Get her out of here.
I got the bad news this morning. I think I'm gonna have to leave right away.
Hello, this is Webb Hubble. Life insurance is now available for responsible marijuana smokers. For years, responsible marijuana smokers have not been able to access affordable life insurance products. Normal uniquely supports cannabis consumers. Two carriers have already agreed to offer all of their traditional life insurance products at all levels without excluding individuals who smoke marijuana responsibly. Help Normal and help yourself. If you've been declined for life insurance, are paying above market premiums, or simply want to know what now may be available in the way of insurance for marijuana smokers, contact me at info@mclaughlinonline.com or simply call me at 202-293-5566.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended Shaolin Temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
Welcome back, everyone. 43 after the hour, and we're going to take some time here to give you a good look at what's going on in the Western efforts to end prohibition in 2010 and in 2012. Lots of stuff happening out here out west. I'm just going to wanted to put it all together in one package here. We can just talk about all the different states going on. Most recently, this is the news that broke today with regard to Nevada. Now, the state of Nevada has a group called Nevadans for Sensible Marijuana Laws, and they have been the front organization for Marijuana Policy Project. They were funded by MPP in their ballot initiatives in 2002 and in 2006 to put marijuana legalization on the ballot in Nevada. Well, the news just came out from the Las Vegas Review-Journal today that Nevadans for Sensible Marijuana Laws has lost their funding from the Marijuana Policy Project for the current drive to put legalization on the ballot in 2020. Mike Menno of MPP told the Las Vegas Review-Journal that they have had to cut back on funding, on their funding of various groups. Now, the polling right now in Nevada is only showing about 42% for legalization, so it appears that had something to do with MPP pulling their funding from the Nevada group they're trying to legalize. But also, this is reflective of bigger problems at MPP in that they've had a lot of their funding revoked from their major donor, Peter Lewis from Progressive Insurance, following the January sex scandal and 3-month leave of absence of the founder and still executive director, Rob Campia. Now, even though the polls are only showing 42% for legalization in Nevada. This hadn't stopped MPP in the past from supporting the legalization efforts in 2002 and 2006. In 2002, the initiative failed with 39% of the vote, and in 2006, the initiative lost with 44% of the vote. But in responding to this, the Nevada Secretary of State's office, through a spokesperson, Pam Miller, said, quote, "Volunteers have certainly accomplished this feat," that is, getting marijuana legalization on the ballot, "in the past, so we'll just see what happens." And she's trying to point out that there is still the ballot, you know, the petition is still out there for 2012, and if volunteers can get together and call signatures for the initiative, it could still make it onto the ballot. The only problem is the way she mischaracterizes what went on in 2002 and 2006. It wasn't a volunteer effort that got those on the ballot. It was $6 to $10 million of grant money from Marijuana Policy Project that paid for professional signature gatherers to go gather the signatures to get it on the ballot in Nevada. So it appears that when it comes to legalization in Nevada, activists, you're on your own. But don't fret, because we do have some help for you, and that is building from the grassroots up rather than expecting someone from out of state to come and solve your problems for you. And this is something I want to address just in general with regard to law reform, marijuana law reform, because, of course, Normal's been here the longest. We've been here since 1970. And the reason why I think we have such longevity in marijuana law reform is that we're not just anti-prohibition. I mean, prohibition's awful, don't get me wrong. But we're not just anti-prohibition. We're pro-marijuana. We represent marijuana smokers. We represent people who aren't afraid to say they smoke pot and they like it a lot. We think there's nothing wrong with the adult use of marijuana, and it's fit by our acronym, NORMAL. We think it's perfectly normal. There's nothing morally or criminally wrong with the use of marijuana. And that differs from the other groups that are out there. If you go to MPP's website and you look up their mission statement, it has something to do with dedicated to ending the harms of marijuana prohibition, right? It's all about the harms of marijuana prohibition. It's almost like they go out of their way to say, well, it's not necessarily that we're for smoking pot or anything. We just think locking up pot smokers is a bad idea. And that's fine. I'm cool with that. I'm not trying to denigrate that. I think there's a place for that. There are people who don't necessarily smoke pot, who are uncomfortable with prohibition, and they need someone to represent them. I think that's fantastic. But when it comes to grassroots, when it comes to the actual people who are the stakeholders in getting marijuana prohibition overturned, that's where we come in. That's where NORMAL comes in. So, I want to encourage everyone in the state of Nevada who wants to get involved in the signature gathering process. We've got till 2012 here to get involved with our two new NORMAL chapters that we have opened in the state of Nevada. Great news. Last week, we were able to incorporate Northern Nevada NORMAL. They're out in Reno, in the Reno, Tahoe, Carson City area. And if you want to get in touch with them, check out the web at northernnevadanormal.com. You know, whole words, northernnevadanormal.com. And just yesterday, I was able to affiliate a new group, Las Vegas NORMAL, of course, in Clark County in the Las Vegas area. And they haven't got their website up yet. It was just yesterday they were approved. But you can email them, monalisa@embarkmail.com. That's Mona Lisa, like the painting, at embark, which is E-M-B-A-R-Q-M-A-I-L, embarkmail.com, if you want to get involved in the state of Nevada. I've also got contacts with some of the reporters at the Las Vegas Review-Journal. I met one of them while I was in Las Vegas for the Netroots Nation conference. We can put you in touch with the media, and we can definitely get attention for NORMAL's efforts to pass legalization in the state of Nevada. Now, looking elsewhere around the West, of course, we've got California's Prop 19 that is on the ballot, pushing forward for legalization in for all adults 21 and over in this November. And so a lot of attention has been focused on California. We've pointed out how the California Democratic establishment is against Prop 19. If you look at Senator Barbara Boxer, Senator Dianne Feinstein, former Governor Jerry Brown, the current Attorney General, they've all come out out against Prop 19. And Ryan Grimm in the Huffington Post just recently wrote about this and wrote about what they're calling the Brodus effect, this idea that people are more supportive of marijuana law reform in the ballot box than they are in front of pollsters. And this has led some Democrats, Democratic strategists, to theorize that the ballot initiatives to legalize marijuana in California and to a lesser extent the Oregon and South Dakota and Arizona initiatives to legalize medical marijuana may have a lot to do with bringing out the younger and the more female and the more minority voters who would be more likely to vote Democratic. And I don't agree with that analysis. I think that this is a completely different situation in that the Democrats who are also on the ticket are against the initiative that's bringing the voters out to the ballot box, right? The reason this whole thing worked in 2004 with the anti-gay marriage equality initiatives that Karl Rove and their operatives papered in 2004, the difference was Karl Rove and the Republicans actually believed that. They actually agreed with the initiatives, right? I think the Democrats are in for a big surprise that they'll find a lot of cannabis consumers who are motivated to come out to vote are only going to vote on marijuana. Right? Like, they don't bother to vote ever, but this one time I'll come out, I'll vote yes on legalization, then I'll leave. Right? So they might not even vote for the rest of the candidates. And if they do bother to vote, they might think about Feinstein and Boxer and Brown and all these Democrats who are against marijuana legalization.
And you know, if I was a California resident because of Dianne Feinstein, myself as a marijuana smoker, I wouldn't be voting for anyone. I mean, don't pick the lesser of two evils as far as voting Democrat or Republican. Don't vote.
Yeah, that's always an option that they fail to realize. That's
people,
a protest.
Yeah, I don't think people realize that. You don't have to fill in the bubble.
Yeah,
fill in the one bubble and don't fill in the rest.
That's right. And that could send a message to those Democrats that, hey, look at all the support marijuana got, and yet some of our candidates didn't do so well. And maybe they'll get the message. Maybe they'll get the hint. And I've also theorized, and I've said this before on the show, that it's only a matter of time before some smart Republican strategists start looking at the need to get more younger voters, more female voters, more minority voters, and they realize that marijuana legalization fits that for them. And they can put it in their little frames of small government and personal responsibility and sell that quite easily to their audience if they just frame it the right way. It's going to happen. Somebody is going to pick that low-hanging fruit of marijuana legalization and make hay out of it. And it's looking like the Republicans might do that before the Democrats do. Now, looking outside of California and Nevada, another state, of course, looking at changes in marijuana law reform is my own home state here of Oregon. With the I-28 initiative, the I-28 initiative is a regulated dispensary initiative for the state of Oregon. And this is something that many people have criticized Oregon about for years, is that we have a really nice program as far as limits and being able to grow and have a card registry system for patients and growers and caregivers that all protects them from arrest. That's been a good thing. But it's always been pointed out that we lack access. There's no place for a medical marijuana patient to buy marijuana legally. Right. So that's always been a problem. And of course, our friends down south of us in California always mention that whenever we talk about Oregon's program, that we have no access. So I-28 is designed to alleviate that problem, to create a system of providers and dispensaries. I forget what the actual term is for dispensaries, but basically people could become providers and be able to sell their medicine to the dispensaries, which could then sell it to the patients and the caregivers. In doing some analysis of this, though, I've been looking around the net and I found some really interesting things. And one of these is a post that was written from the Stormy Ray Cardholders Foundation. Now, to be fair, the Stormy Ray Cardholders Foundation is very medical marijuana centric. They don't want to have anything to do with legalization. In fact, they'd prefer if legalizers kept their little grimy fingers out of medical. That's their kind of attitude about that. So they have always been opposed to anything that, you know, smells like legalization to them. Well, Stormy Ray writes about this dispensary system and in particular about this providers system, right? The providers who will be growing the marijuana to sell to the dispensaries. In the I-28 initiative, it's Section 3, subparagraph 12, which says the DHS, the Department of Human Services, shall establish this system to authorize production of marijuana by a producer. And they have to get their name and their address. They have to pay a $1,000 fee to become a producer. They have to be an Oregon resident. They have to be 21 years of age. They get a license for 1 year to become a producer. And it says the department shall issue a producer registry identification card, aka a medical marijuana card, a card that protects you from arrest, to each listed producer and employee of the producer within 30 days of issuing a license who has met the requirements of this section, and the fee for each card will be $10. So you got to pay the $1,000 fee to become a producer, and they shall issue a license to you within 30 days if you meet all the requirements, and then you got to pay $10 a card for yourself and for your employees. Well, that's a really interesting use of the word shall. What this means is the department has to give out producer licenses to anybody who meets the requirements, and the requirements are $1,000, proof of Oregon residency, and you're age 21.
I qualify.
You qualify, John, as does...
I got $1,000.
As does just about everyone we know.
Yeah.
And that's what the Stormy Ray Cardholders Foundation is pointing out here. And I quote Stormy Ray here. For $1,000, anyone and everyone who wants to legally be able to possess marijuana will be able to. A provider card will be 4 times better than a patient card and much easier to get. A provider will not need a doctor's recommendation. A provider will be able to possess 24 mature plants, 4 times the number a patient can. A provider can possess 6 pounds of marijuana, 4 times the amount a patient can. A provider will be able to have an unlimited number of employee or helper cards for only $10 a card. A patient can only give cards out to a caregiver and a grower. A provider can sell marijuana to a dispensary, but patients and caregivers can't. A provider is given the exact same protections as patients are from search by police, arrest, and so forth. And this is the big catch. The providers don't have to sell marijuana to the dispensary. They just have to report what they did sell and what they did give away every quarter.
I quit, Russ.
I know, John. John's gone.
Bye,
man. He's leaving the show. He's gone, man.
I'll see you guys.
Yeah, this is I-28. Now, Stormy Ray continues to say, it is obvious that every marijuana smoker in Oregon that can afford to pay $1,000 will become a provider. It's foreseeable that the number of providers could quickly outnumber the patients. The provider card's easier to get and 4 times better. Why wouldn't someone that uses marijuana on a regular basis get this card? How is I-28 not a complete legalization bill allowing anyone with $1,000 to possess marijuana? Well, of course, Stormy Ray's writing that as if it's a bad thing. I think it's wonderful. Sure, $1,000 fee to be a legal marijuana smoker, to have 6 pounds of weed and 24 plants. I think we can raise the Benjamins.
And you know, that is $1,000 a year. That's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money to some
people.
But
you know what? $1,000 is a lot less money than buying 6 pounds of weed.
Yeah, it's a lot less money than paying a defense attorney.
To get out of jail, yeah.
It sure is. Yeah, so this is an amazing development. You know, I hadn't noticed this part in the I-28 initiative. It makes me really like it a whole lot more.
Yeah, I mean, this is awesome. This is the first I've heard of it.
So. Yeah. Now, another point that they make out here is, Stormy Ray makes again, is this glut of marijuana on the market will drive the price that dispensaries pay the providers down very quickly. But just like California, dispensaries will still have overhead and salaries to pay, so the prices the dispensaries will have to charge patients will remain high. I don't think so. I think if everybody in Oregon who's got $1,000 that wants to grow and sell to dispensaries, I think there'll be such a glut of marijuana that the price will come down, especially if it's legalized in California at the same time. This entire West Coast, we might see the return of the $10 bag, the four-finger lid, man.
And, you know, even if it was $1,000 a pound, these producers could make a lot of money still.
Yeah.
And you know, $1,000 a pound for marijuana would be a steal right now.
Yeah, no kidding. And you know, we know growers down in Southern Oregon who are producing outdoor plants. And what are they getting off per plant there?
Between 2 to 12 to maybe 15 pounds a plant.
Yeah, per plant.
Per plant. 6 plants that they have, one patient. That's
it. 6 plants per patient, right? So if you're a producer, you pay $1,000, you can grow 24 plants outdoors and perhaps get, you know, 10 pounds off of a plant each.
Easy.
I think $1,000 is more than reasonable. Well, I hope this look at the Western marijuana law reform efforts has been informative. I've written on all the stories I just told you about. Check out stash.normal.org. We've got a comments section if you'd like to leave some comments about it. Stay tuned for the replays if you missed anything at 3, 5, 7, and 9 Pacific with Daily Toker Tunes playing in between. For Ganja John and Cannabis Carry, I'm Radical Russ with normal.org. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
over.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take it on one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.